Grace and peace from God who is, who was, and who is to come. Amen. So I've mentioned this before, and I know that there are at least a few of you here who can relate to this. But I am admittedly not the best or most courteous of drivers around. I readily yell at other drivers when they do things that I deem to be stupid or dangerous, like passing me on the right-hand side, or riding my rear bumper when I'm already going 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, although I have to say that speed limits are really by people who think safety is way more than important than what it really is. But the one that gets me... And it happened just yesterday afternoon as I was coming in. Driving north on 15 to go onto 581 northbound, PennDOT, in their infinite and wonderful wisdom, did not put in a four-clover leaf entrance. Oh, no, no, no. Instead of going onto the right to swing around and to get onto 581 to go northbound, no. You have to do a left-hand exit. Now, admittedly, they at least put signs up for roughly 3 miles. So if you're paying attention, you know that if you want to go northbound on 581, you need to be in the left-hand lane. But there will always be somebody who gets up there, wants to go northbound on 581, is all the way over to the right, suddenly realizes, oh, I need to be over in the left-hand lane, and instead of going up to the Camp Hill Mall, pulling in, turning around, and then getting on 581, the safe and legal way to do things, oh no, they pull over into the middle lane. They stop because they can't get into the far left-hand turn lane because it's filled with people who are paying attention, and they put their turn signal on in the middle lane and have stopped traffic. And I curse like a drunken sailor. Sorry. I need a moment. Okay. I am not a nice person behind the wheel. I have to remind myself to use all of my fingers when I'm waving at someone. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes, I am able to catch myself and stop myself from doing something that is far, far too rude or dangerous or stupid. Not always, not by a long shot, but sometimes I'm able to come to my senses, come to myself and realize the stupidity of what I am doing or am about to do, and I can make myself stop. And it's that whole idea of coming to your senses, of coming to myself, that caused me to really relate to our gospel story this morning. You might not have caught it. I know with all the times that I've read this story before, I've usually sped right past it, but this time it just kind of jumped right out at me. So let me attempt to show you. So we're all familiar with the story of the prodigal son, right? Or at least we think we are. Jesus is telling the story, this parable. He's trying to illustrate a point to the Pharisees and the scribes, the religious leaders of the day. And so the lead-in to this story, the Pharisees and the scribes, they're complaining about Jesus behind his back. You didn't know that Lutherans were in the Bible, did you? So they're griping with one another, and they're saying, this fellow, he welcomes sinners and he eats with them. It's like they're purposefully trying to tick Jesus off. But they are stating fact. Jesus has the audacity to allow tax collectors and sinners come and be in his presence. Now, you might be thinking, what's the big deal about tax collectors? We are coming up on April 15th, so you might have your own ideas about tax collectors. But in first century Palestine, the tax collectors did not work for the local government. They worked for the occupying government. The tax collectors worked for the Romans. And the only way that tax collectors got paid was by gouging their fellow citizens. And most tax collectors lived rather nicely. And sinners, of course, well, you know, who wants to hang around with sinners? You know, their sin might rub off on those who are pious or deem themselves to be holy, righteous, above reproach, the way that the Pharisees and the scribes thought of themselves. So here in our story, Jesus is surrounded by these two groups. He's surrounded with the tax collectors and the sinners, and then there are the Pharisees and the scribes. So Jesus gives them this story. There's a small businessman. He's got two sons. They're going to inherit the business when he dies. But the younger one can't wait. He's got stuff to do, places to go. He's got big dreams, maybe along with some partying to do. So he asks his dad for his share of the company now. And for whatever reason, we're not told, but for whatever reason, the father complies. And so off the younger one goes. It's like he's purposely trying to tick off his dad. But pretty quickly, the money is gone. And worse, as soon as his money is gone, the recession hits, along with all of the floods and that big fire. And food is scarce. Jobs are non-existent, and he is in some really deep stuff. And the only means of employment he can find is something that is almost completely reprehensible to him. Almost. He still does it, but he hates doing it. And while he's in the midst of this abhorrent job, he comes to himself. He gives himself the Gibbs dope slap on the back of the head and says, "At my father's business, even the lowliest of workers has it better than I do right now. If I go home, I can hire on into whatever position that they will give me, and I'll be better off than what I am now. I'll say to my father, I'm sorry. I was foolish and frivolous and stupid, and I do not deserve to be called your son, but I need food to eat. I need a decent place to sleep. I will do anything. Please, just give me a job." So he walks away from this disgusting job, and he hoofs it back home. And as he's walking up the road to his old man's business, his dad sees him coming down the road. And his father gets up, and he goes outside, and does he tell them, "Get off of my property"? Which would be the John Brock response. Does he wait till he gets up there and slam the door in his son's face? No. The father sees his son walking down the road, and this businessman hitches up his trousers and sprints down the road to his son. And his son stops. He says, "Father, I am a total idiot. I do not deserve to be called your son." But before he can go any farther in this prepared and practiced speech, his father grabs him. He kisses him. He calls out to one of the other employees, "Bring my son some clean clothes. Start the fixings for a feast because my son is home." Except, and this is where the real life kicks into the story, and we know that Jesus is speaking the truth, because when older brother hears and sees what's going on, big brother is pissed. Older brother does what I'm fairly certain would be the John Brock reaction if my sibling had pulled this crap, because as I attempted to explain, we all know what a mean and vengeful person I am. Older brother becomes angry, refuses to take part. Now, dad does go out and try to explain his own actions to his elder child, but big brother doesn't want to hear it. Dad talks about forgiveness and rejoicing, starting over, and then the story ends, and we don't get anything more. But did you catch that part in the middle? It wasn't even a full sentence. It was the first half of verse 17. "But when he came to himself, he said, when he came to himself. Have you ever come to yourself? Have you ever been in the middle of doing something? Maybe it's something that you love. Maybe it was something you don't really care about, you know, whatever. Have you ever been doing something and realized, this is not what I want to be doing. This is not even what I should be doing. Why am I even doing this in the first place? You know, kind of like maybe you were trying to purposefully tick yourself off. Did you give yourself that Gibbs dope slap in the back of the head? So what did the younger son do when he found himself in that situation? After he came to himself, he goes home. What is it that drags you down? Where is that place that you find to be reprehensible? It might be anything. Maybe it's your job that's sucking the life out of you. Maybe you're in a situation with your best friend that is just crappy and you can't get out of it. Maybe you are an obnoxious driver. Maybe you're in a personal financial situation, or possibly maybe you're addicted to, well, addicted to anything. What is it that is keeping you from home? And by home here, I think what Jesus really means is that he's not talking about the place where you grew up. For here in this story, I think Jesus is talking about the place where we feel safe. The place where we feel loved. And if you don't have a place like that in your life, then you need to find one. Because it's in that place where God speaks the loudest to us. It's in that place, wherever it might be, that we can hear God the best. It's in that place where God runs to meet us. And it's in that place where Christ says, get my child some clean clothes and let's start the feast. For this my child, yes, Christ calls us my child. For this my child was dead and is now alive. My child was lost and now is found. Come, meet Jesus, who welcomes us home.